making good. I'm Renee Blanchard, founder and operator of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery, located here in New Orleans, Louisiana. Church Alley is a people-first, mission-driven small business that I opened in 2013. And the best part about owning a cafe is the people. So in this podcast, I interview the makers, the farmers, and the many interesting people I've met through the shops, the folks doing the good work here in Louisiana and all along the Gulf Coast. Let's get started.
Hey, Renee, I am so happy to be here having this conversation with you. For your listeners, my name is Molly Kimball. I am a registered dietitian here in New Orleans. Kind of several different aspects of my role. The end goal of everything that I do career-wise, and of course, career-wise overlaps with your personal as well. There's like in the world of nutrition, you're always a dietitian, you know, and in your personal space, there's a lot of overlap in these things. And so my full-time job is with Osher Health, and I've been with Osher actually this summer, made 23 years. And I've been a dietitian with Osher for that long, always in the fitness center space. So I never was in the hospital or the clinic or in that area, but always the fitness center. And so I started our nutrition program there in 1999. We didn't have a nutrition program in place. And so I know you personally, as you're going through school to become a dietitian, I think you can appreciate this little side story. I was in my dietetic internship and I was getting closer to the end of it. And I was thinking, what's my first job going to be? You know, and you're exploring different options. And I saw posted in the then called the New Orleans Dietetic Association, you know, job posting that the fitness center, it was then called Elmwood Fitness Center, now it's Osher Fitness Center, was looking to hire a dietitian. And I thought, I wonder what that's about. And the way it was written, it looked very much like a food service position. And so I interviewed, and I was still in my internship, and the reality was they had no nutrition program in place. They were looking to start a nutrition program, to start for sports, for performance, but also just regular people working out, people with hypertension and diabetes, or these, you know, people who are working with a trainer and want that little extra edge, all, you know, just the things that you would look at a fitness center type nutrition. And so I applied for the job. I got the job and I was really, really thrilled, but I was also terrified because when you're in school and when you're in your internship, there's always someone to ask the question. At the time, things weren't digital. Everything was printed, you know, like back in the day, but you would open this big closet. And if you needed a teaching sheet, an educational sheet on fill in the blank topic, they had everything there that some other dietitian back in history had created, that like you had all these resources and all this stuff that was like right here at your fingertips that you had available to you, or a dietitian right there who you could say, I don't know what to do about this. So I interviewed for the position, I got the position, and they said, I remember the first time I met the woman who oversaw all the trainers at that time, she said, we are so excited to finally have a sports nutrition expert on staff here. And I thought, I finished my internship on a Friday and I started the program there on a Monday. And I was so overwhelmed. And I remember it was at the water fountain. I remember right where I was when she said it. I was thinking, I don't even know how to decide what we charge people. People are going to pay to sit down and talk with me. It was so wildly overwhelming at that time. And also, even currently, we don't have a lot of sports nutrition focus in a dietetic internship. There's so many other things to cover that may be, you know, more medical, more clinical based. And so sports nutrition is not something at the time we had anything about. So I thought, wow, I need to like really get myself more versed I spent probably the first 18 months, I read every single thing I could get my hands on. I learned so much. I started meeting with clients, you know, right away. And that was also intimidating because you had people who they knew a lot about their bodies and they knew a lot about what's worked for them and what hasn't. But I took that opportunity to learn from them. If I didn't know something, I would let them know that. I would look it up, research it, and then that kind of becomes your own knowledge base. So anyway, that's sort of a long story, it's our nutrition program at the fitness center. Started that in a very, very organic, it looks very different than it does today, you know? So it was me there figuring out, wow, how do I do this? How do I get this off the ground? And so over the years from 1999 and about 2013, we started our Eat Fit initiative. And what was cool about that is you know, over the years of working with clients one-on-one, you start to see the trends. Like, where do people like fall off track? Or like when they're on their A game, they can do their meal prep or they're planning their snacks. They're bringing, you know, they're bringing their things to work. But like when real life comes in, like they don't know, they freeze. They don't know what to do. So if they're going out to their favorite restaurants or their favorite cafe or coffee shop, like yours, you know, and they're looking at a menu board or they're looking at the things in the deli case or bakery case, or they're at a festival, they're at a restaurant, it's hard to know. So in 2013, we started Eat Fit. And that was the Eat Fit is a, so, you know, we have, that's more of the community facing side. And so we work with restaurants, cafes like yours. We, it's a nonprofit, so we don't charge partners to be a partner with Eat Fit. We, as our team of dietitians, have grown, and we work with these restaurants, these food service spaces, and identify the nutritious options. And we'll talk about kind of what the parameters are of that or how this came in just a bit. But that program has grown since 2013. We now have 6 dietitians in 6 cities around the state steering the Eat Fit initiative. We have just under 600 partners that have Eat Fit on the menu. We now have a beautiful addition to our team is Erin Arsenault, who, she's not a dietitian. She does all of our events and special programs, but also our youth programming, which has really blossomed, and kids cooking classes and stuff. So the big picture, I guess, all of that is to say that under the Ochsner space that we have of nutrition, we have one side of it is the client-facing role, which is kind of where I had started that. And now we have 3 dietitians who work full-time and 2 in New Orleans and 1 in Baton Rouge who have continued to grow and blossom and build that. And we do nutrition for food sensitivities, and we knew, you know, all types of things that we've sort of grown into this space. And then on the community side, we have Eat Fit.
Wow. I had no idea that you had been at Ochsner for so long before you even...
Crazy.
Well, a baby RD.
When you look at, like, every once in a while, someone will run across and, like, maybe one of the computer systems, like, my first photo that went on your ID that you would scan to get access into the club, and, like, it'll land in my office. Someone, like, you know, makes it, prints it out, and they, like, this is hilarious, because, yeah, it's like, oh, look, here's baby Molly.
Wow, that's amazing. That's so interesting that... Well, first, I just want to thank you so much for being here and talking to me. And I have really enjoyed Church Alley. I think we've been part of Eat Fit for, I think, just before the hurricane, maybe just like last summer. So maybe coming a year now.
Right.
And I was just so happy to do that because I knew that my menu was really good, and we're kind of under, you know, I always say we sneak vegetables to everyone, or like give you extra vegetables in a meal that you weren't really, maybe doesn't always have a bunch of vegetables or something like that.
And also, I don't know how often you talk about Church Alley on your podcast, but for anyone who's listening who hasn't been there, it's just a really like warm and welcoming and comfortable space. And so if you haven't been in there, go. It's like a really great place to have meetings, to, you know, you can be there for personally and just chill or meet other people there. It's like, it sort of feels like you're in your cool aunt's living room a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Thank you for saying that. I always say it's like your grandma's living, the grandma likes living room. Right. And that's kind of, that's totally what we try to do, is that it's just a living room, and then you can have, you know, hang out and eat these meals.
Totally.
Yeah. And so when you, I guess one question I had was, how did you know that you wanted to study dietetics and be in, and kind of do nutrition like in this way?
That's a great question. So we, growing up, I grew up primarily with my dad. My parents split when I was really, really young. I always was close with my mom, but you know, she moved away when I was younger. And so my dad was really sort of like my whole person, you know, on, you know, all spaces, all facets of kind of growing up. And he was always very, very into nutrition and wellness. You know, he jogged before people really jogged, and they were like, why is he running down the street? You know, and like maybe running shoes weren't really like in existence, like official running shoes. Yeah. And so, but he was always really health minded, and, you know, we would do things that like, looking back, I'm like, I know people thought like that yeah. little Kimball girl and her dad, because we went to a church, and just, you know, it was a regular, church, a Methodist church in Baton Rouge, but not super conservative, but more conservative than us riding our bikes and t-shirt and shorts to church. Nobody else.
Oh, well, yeah.
Especially then, you know, the men wore suits, the women wore dresses, and here we show up and are like, we just rode our bikes here, you know, and just a different, like, you know, I think that was probably seemed a little strange to people, you know, that yeah. he always layered like just movement in or fun in, and also nutrition. Like that was always, you know, he educated himself and was mindful. And of course, you know, some of it was misinformed, you know, in the '80s of like what mm-hmm. was healthy, but to what was the best known at that time, you know, he would go that route. And of course he's also evolved and his understanding of that as science has evolved in that. But so that was really sort of like my main interest of first having that idea. That was basically like my recreational like interest was learning about that and like how different foods respond in our body and stuff like this. And I actually, when I started college, I didn't realize that a dietitian even was a career. I had no idea that was a profession. And so I started in pre-med, thinking I wanted to go the route of like medical school with a microbiology major. And then when I learned about that nutrition and being a dietitian, I didn't even know that word existed at that time, was a career. I was like, wait, this is a really cool thing. So immediately I switched my major to that and started, you know, putting that emphasis on dietetics as those classes. And then I also got a second degree in food science because that's sort of another space that I geek out in. And so I took one food science class and I was just smitten. I really loved it. And so then I was able to get dual degrees, one in nutrition and dietetics and then one in food science. And I didn't end up going the food science route, you know, of like working with the company or doing officially, but unofficially, we do that all the time with you. Right. You know, we're working with restaurants. We have a deep understanding of like how ingredients work in food. We have the Eat Fit King Cake, and that was like, let's scale this up. How do we do this? And so there are things that food science degree, I don't know if I would, I would say every day, but maybe every week there's some element that I'm like, I don't even realize it, but you're pulling from that. So, so that was sort of my dad, I think, and that interest that kind of drove and fueled that passion. And then just the more I learned about it. And also I think at a time, like, you know, I was going to college, starting college in like the late '90s, and there was just so much learning and knowledge about the things that we know now and we take for granted. A lot of that was just being uncovered. Yeah. You know, I remember like sitting in college and the professor was talking about omega-3s, this interesting concept called omega-3s, you know? And so it was a really interesting time that there was just so much growth in science and nutrition. And so I think that kind of fueled on both spaces.
Oh, that's so interesting. Where did you get your undergrad?
LSU.
At LSU. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure LSU specifically was an interesting time too.
Like yeah.
Such a science-based university.
Right. Know? Right. Right. And the food science program there is really cool too. It's yeah. And they have like right now, they have the food incubator. So certain brands that are like Hanley salad dressings started in the food incubator. And so when someone comes to them with an idea, there's these food science professors who now are a team of them that are working with small brands and ideas to say, let's help you scale it up. Here's how you take what you've been making in your kitchen and here's how you would do it for full production.
Oh,
everything you need to know from start to finish on that. So that food incubator has sort of grown out of that food science space there. So yeah, to me, it's just fascinating.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I'm entering my junior year for dietetics over at Nichols, and all of last year, my original degree is in international political science. So I didn't.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So there's a lot transferred, but a lot didn't transfer. And I also am similar age. I graduated I graduated in 2002, you know, my college. So it's also a long time ago.
I bet the looking around your classes, the conversations, it couldn't be more different.
I know. Yeah.
The two areas of focus. Yeah.
I know. It's really interesting. And so I've had to take you know, these basic classes. And I've already, just the way it's scheduled, I've taken some of the labs. Like I just took food science lab last semester, which was super interesting, but it was literally like boiling rice like five different ways, or like different types of rice and what happens, which is kind of interesting. And we just did that on all different kinds of, you know, like play, you know, just played around with all the food and what was going to happen, and then trying to like look at that data. And it was so fascinating to me, especially like being down here, like you cook all these things the way your family cooks them, and you don't really pay attention to why anything is done in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And as you're talking, I'm like, I just had the, oh, wait, what if, you know, I'm fascinated. There's been a big evolution in the plant-based sweeteners section.
Yes.
And that's something you, like we've touched on just briefly through like emails and stuff, but there's plant-based sweeteners that are no calorie sweeteners that so many dietitians don't know about. And I have a feeling that in the food science classes or just the dietetics classes, they're not teaching it, but that's something that I think is a real gap. So I'm like, huh, maybe we should reach out and offer to guest teach a class on this.
I would love that, because we are looking, because you brought over some other sugars, and we actually have a customer too that works for one of those companies. I can't remember the name of it now, and brought us a bunch of samples. Yeah. And we don't know. Yeah, we don't know.
Exactly. And it's like, well, there's plant-based sweeteners that still have a lot of, they're just as much sugar, and they're still added sugar. They may be lower glycemic, but they're still added sugar. And then there's plant-based sweeteners that are no zero calorie, but then they're natural. And it's like, but which ones and how do you know? And then they also behave very, very differently in baking from one another. Like each of the ingredients, they may look the same, but they work very differently. And how you would use them is very different. So you know, that's, that would be a whole nother topic, but that's like, as you said, I'm like, there's a gap in the educational space.
Yes. Well, we would love to be an experimenter, that kind of stuff. And it's interesting because I don't eat a lot of sugar because I taste it so much. Like I can, you know, and different types of sugars, I don't like the flavor in a lot of, because to me, sometimes it tastes bitter as opposed to sweet. And so I'm always like, oh God, what is this going to taste like? Yeah.
You know, I'm a big advocate of whatever sweetener you're going to choose to use, try to use as little of it as possible, even if it's a plant-based zero calorie sweetener, because more and more and more, we're simply training our taste buds to be acclimated for more and more and more sweet, even if it's a natural plant-based sweetener. Like, let's try to get to where we're actually tasting the real food, and instead of making our coffee taste like candy or something, you know? Mm-hmm. So regardless of the sweetener, I do encourage to, you know, try to get by with less so that we are not training our bodies to just be so accustomed to something being so sweet.
Yeah. So when you said that Eat Fit came about in 2013, what did that look like? How did that happen?
So it was... It's been an interesting journey, I would say. So our then CEO said, hey, Molly, what can we do to have a bigger impact in the community space beyond you and your team of dietitians meeting with people one-on-one? And for years, my husband had been saying, I've contributed to the newspaper, the Times-Picayune, for years, since like 2006. And I have a weekly TV segment on our ABC affiliate, WGNO, and I do that. I've done that every week since 2009. And sometimes people think, you know, they feel like they know you or things like that, you know. And so sometimes we would be out, many times we'd be out at a restaurant, and people would come up to my husband and I and either say, you know, I have high blood pressure or I have diabetes. What would be the best thing here for me to order? Yeah. Or they would be judgmental of me and they would say, I can't believe you're eating here. There's nothing healthy. And you'd say, well, no, there is. Like, we, you know, order this with this or whatever. And so over the years, my husband would say, Molly, like, you should work with restaurants and put the, you know, some sort of a seal by these dishes that indicates like what a healthy option would be. And I was like, well, that would be great. But I was like, you know, had been for the past at this point now, I guess, because this conversation probably, you know, started in around 2011 and 12, but But at this point, as Brad's telling me this, I was still, 10 years in, but you're building this program and you've got more and more coming. And like my focus is on clients and, helping the success of that arm of what we do grow. And I was like, that would just be a giant undertaking, Brad. Like, I can't right now. And so I was like, I think it's cool. But so when Dr. Quinlan, who is then our CEO, brings this up, I was like, maybe that's something that have a bigger community impact could be working with restaurants. So what if we worked with restaurants and incorporated healthy options on their menus, or, work with their chefs, or, provide either that guidance or education, recipe analysis. And they were like, sure, go for it. So Osher just was like, okay, try it out. So literally, okay, well, what's the logo going to look like? Do we charge? Do we not charge? And I felt really strongly that we need to not charge, because a lot of restaurants are, they're week to week on making the light bills, take out COVID. This is well before that. Restaurants still had a hard time. And so, I was like, this needs to be something that we do as a community initiative. This needs to be something that we're giving the community. And the trickle down effect has been really cool, because we work with a restaurant. We may work with a chef. He may have a diagnosis, a health diagnosis or a health scare, or something that might be mild or might be really serious that he's working with. And a lot of times he doesn't have anybody else, or she doesn't have anybody else in their life that they can trust for that reliable information. So what started as, let's work with these restaurants to put things on the menu for the community, also we realized, wow, this is a really strong education inside of the restaurant, and then it trickles down. And so with Eat Fit, of course, as we're in there, we do staff education, we want the servers to be well versed in Eat Fit, so there's a big far reaching in that space as well. So we said, so the question, what did it look like? It was me deciding, gosh, what's the criteria going to look like? And so I used some things that were sort of fundamentals, like, our USDA guidelines that we would recommend for, saturated fat. For sugar, I looked at the American Heart Association's recommendations for upper limits for the day. And then, how would we break that out if it was per meal or whatever? And same for sodium. The American Heart Association has kind of a heart check program, that they look at restaurant meals. And so sort of use that as our baseline for sodium, because that was a really hard one, because restaurant meals are so high in sodium. Gosh, where do you put that limit so it's realistic? So kind of developing, what do these nutritional criteria look like? What are we going to call it? What does the logo look like? And so for the first 3 years, it was me and interns helping and hitting the pavement and reaching out to people that we had contacts with. And it's very much a one-on-one individual. Most restaurants, they're not high responders to a mass mailer or mass anything. It's very individual. Yeah. And so over those 3 years, we grew from the three restaurants who did it with me, let's just try it out and see what happens. They trusted me, they did it with me. And then it got to 12, and then it got to 20 something, and then we got to 60 something, and I'm still seeing clients and doing all this. And I was like, oh my gosh, finally I was able to have a budget to hire our Eat Fit NOLA dietitian in 2016. And so I was so grateful to have that position. And we applied for a grant with Blue Cross Blue Shield, the foundation of Louisiana. And we got it for a 3-year grant to expand Eat Fit across the state. So, and we got that in 2017. 3 years, and it helped to fund the expansion to put a dietitian in these 6 cities around the state, 5 in addition to New Orleans. And that was one of those where I can say it now, I wouldn't have said it like this then, but you kind of talk big as you're writing a big grant. It's a 3-year collective impact grant, and you're talking all big. Oh, we could do this, we could do this, because part of you thinks we're not going to get it. Right. So let's just reach for the sun and the moon in here. That sounds great. And then when we got it, I was like, oh gosh, I've never been to Monroe. But little by little, we figured out, okay, how do we replicate what we did, what we've done in New Orleans, and what has been successful in New Orleans? What do we need to do to replicate it in these other spaces? Because every city has a very, very, very different food culture and people culture. And there's different ways that you communicate in those spaces. There's different ways the restaurants communicate. There's different food styles. All of it looks very different. And so we had to work, we had a real rapid growth. And so it felt a little bit like mayhem inside for a little bit, because you had this growth. We also tracked everything. We tracked every bit of impact we had so that we could show that for the salary of one dietitian in these six cities, here's how much we're moving the needle. And so at the end of that three-year grant, it was a really beautiful thing because Ochsner looked at this and said, this is, you know, a gold standard for community programming. And we're honored to continue to support this fully. And so I remember tears started coming out and I was with two of our top leaders. And when they said it, I said, I think I might cry.
Yeah.
Don't cry. And I was like, yeah, this is a really big deal, you know? And so that we had rapid growth. And as you have rapid growth in anything, what works in one space has to be modified a little bit. And then when you have what's going to now be six different people doing a system, it started to look a little bit different. So then after we had that growth, we had to kind of take a step back. Okay, how do we streamline this so that it may not look exactly, because you have to, it's got to be personalized to that region, but basically our processes and our processes are streamlined enough that it's replicatable. And so that was, you know, sort of 2020, 2019, we spent a lot of time seeing now that we have this growth, how do we tighten it up and how do we not have wasted energy and wasted time and focus, you know? And so now, you know, we're able to cover a lot of ground because we try to be as efficient as possible too. So, you know, because there's now these regions, if one is doing one thing and somebody is asked in another region to do something similar, the other thing I'll say is our dietitians in each of these regions have so much support and love for each other, and they're so close and they're so tight, which I'm really proud of, because to be spread across the state yet to be such a tight, tight, trusting, loving team is really cool. And so they work really well to have that support so that we don't have a lot of one-offs. You know, we try to make sure if something's being created for one initiative, we can cross-utilize that in these other regions. And again, kind of keeping that streamlined approach.
Yeah. And so I really appreciated, you know, when we first started, I think Maria, she came and spoke with me, who's also a dietitian, and she had come to Church Alley before and stuff like that, and was excited about us coming on board. And then we just sent y'all, you know, well, one, my philosophy for this shop is that we put as little sugar as possible in any item so that people can add whatever they want to taste. And that's just like, for us, an efficiency issue, you know, to make the flavor so people can kind of modify it the way that they want it. So it's perfect. And so we just kind of gave y'all our recipes, and then y'all went in and really looked at the data, the nutritional value of each of those recipes. And then from a user perspective, we have little notes on our menu board that shows which ones y'all fit within your guidelines. And then a customer can also download an app, the EatFit app.
Thank you. Yeah.
And then log in. And they, wherever they are, they can just say, where's a place, I'm on the corner of, you know, in mid-city, where's a place that has some good items that I know I can eat? And then a little map pops up and you kind of look around and can look at all the menus and the nutritional value of each of those items. And so it's a really user-friendly concept as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. The app is really helpful to kind of like geolocate what's around you. We were meeting with one of our partners, and he has a storefront on Canal Street, and he's always maybe a little abrupt. He's very, very kind and loving, but always a little abrupt, a little rushed, you know, and it always kind of pokes a little fun. And so we were in there just visiting with him, and a girl walks in, and it was actually Maria who we were talking about, and myself, and we each had our EatFit NOLA shirts on. And a girl walks in, and like, she literally stops in her tracks, and she stops and she looks at us and she looks at her phone and she holds up the app.
Oh, really?
She refinishes doors for a living. She does a beautiful job. She's refinishes old doors and such. So she's always all over different areas of town for different jobs. And she said, I'm here. I came to this restaurant because it pulled up on the app as the closest place nearby that had EatFit on it. Right. And he's looking at her like, and I was like, it was as if she was a plant, you know, like, we're like, hey lady, come in and say this. But, Yeah, so it's really cool. The app is just also, yeah, it makes it very, very convenient to communicate. When someone says, well, who's a partner? You pull up the app and wherever you are, it's going to pull up what's closest to you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a good
one. And then I think I remember, did you guys maybe switch breads as y'all?
We did. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of things that are whole grain or partially whole grain, but maybe they're not, you know, 100% whole grain or whatever it might be. And so we'll also, instead of just saying, go find it, we kind of say, oh, will you use this version? Here's something similar. So you're not changing the integrity of that dish, yet that one ingredient switch may nutritionally make a lot of difference. You know, sometimes we're doing that with, it could be seasonings or salad dressings or different types of cheeses, even going to different types of wraps or flour wraps, flour tortillas, a corn tortilla. Literally hundreds of milligrams of sodium, it might change. Going from feta to goat, you know, something that seems like really small can save 200-300 milligrams of sodium in something. So some of those little edits that we try to just be really, that are easy for the restaurants usually to make. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, y'all have been sending little emails about some things that y'all find that could be helpful.
Yeah.
If people are looking forward. I mean, and honestly, like, the reason we had switched the bread is because of COVID, because, you know, we had supply issues, you know, which we still have, but it's a lot smoother now than it was even just a year ago.
Yeah.
But in the beginning of the pandemic, our bread persons couldn't keep going, you know, we had to switch it up. And yeah, so that was part of it, but we were like, okay, perfect. Then we got bread back and it was like all these extra items got put on.
Right.
Yeah. And so, what do you think is like, do you have a bigger vision for Eat Fit? It feels like you've just been growing, like you're still like almost 10 years in it, but you're still just like growing it and figuring it out.
Still. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a poor strategic answer because I don't, you know, it's sort of like, well, let's see where things go. But like, part of that Blue Cross grant, you know, in that 3 years funded that expansion. Also, that included, they funded research by a Tulane researcher. And so we worked with Megan Knapp, who's also become just a close friend of Eat Fitch. And so she worked through Tulane and she did research in New Orleans, because at that time, it was about 3 years in, 5 years in, maybe 5 years in, it was more of an established program. And then she also did research in Lafayette, which was in its first year of the program. And so part of that research included interviewing all the restaurant owners and such, and asking them, you know, their perception, their what they perceived as barriers, what they perceived as benefits, what they think the customers see, you know, all types of stuff. But then also it included what they refer to as customer intercept interviews. And so as people are exiting restaurants, and the restaurants gave permission for this, but as those that gave permission, as people would be walking to the restaurant, here they are with her grad students who have their clipboards outside asking them questions about Eat Fit. And like, if you're walking out of like your place, Church Alley Coffee, let's just say at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, that looks one way. You put some of these restaurants, when someone is tumbling out of there after maybe multiple cocktails at 10 p.m. on a Thursday, that's looking a lot different to those researchers. So some of the stories I've heard from people who were some of the grad students working on that are hilarious. But so all of that is to say, Megan, the Tulane researcher, pulled together three different papers, and one actually just got published. It was our first peer-reviewed journal article, like just got published in the past month. Mm-hmm. And it was about, it's on like basically the efficacy of Eat Fit and behavior change. Mm-hmm. And so that was one that she has three papers that she has submitted. And of course, with a peer-reviewed journal, it's a lengthy process, you know, for submission, the review, the questions, and back and forth. But the three, one is impact on the customers, and that was the one that just got published. The other is restaurant perception and basically navigating the scope with restaurants. And then the third is sort of a methods paper for someone who wanted to do something like Eat Fit in another area. What would that look like? And so it's really cool that first one got published, and She presented at a public health conference called SNUB just last weekend, actually, about it, and had just really, in fact, we're scheduled to meet Monday to hear, because she just presented like 5 days ago. She said, wow, there was so much positive feedback. There's a lot of interest in launching something like Eat Fit. So and there's another city actually who has a major health system in another city who has really expressed strong interest, and the health system's leadership is like, we want to do Eat Fit. And so we're in talks with them of what licensing that might look like in another city. It's one of those things that I think on the outside, we have a real fun social media presence. You know, if you follow Eat Fit NOLA or Eat Fit Monroe, Eat Fit Shreveport, just real fun and positive and nice tips or information, education. And I think it seems from the outside like, oh, that's cool. I want to work with restaurants. Mm-hmm. We got a lot under there. You know, I saw somebody gave like an analogy of a duck the other day, where the duck is like on the pond, but its feet underneath it are just like paddling like crazy.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, but you don't see it from the top. And that's sort of what something like Eat Fit is. I mean, it is a beast. It is big. And so I think the idea of wanting to start it versus actually putting it into practice. So the licensing space can be kind of a nice thing, because then we can be there to guide and show, because we've made so many mistakes and we've learned so much along the way that we could really help really streamline a process. It was really flattering. We had, I don't know if I want to say it, but if you think about like, what is the top medical clinic in the country? That one. Yeah. If there's maybe two or three that come to your mind, okay, just we'll say it's one of those. Reached out because they said, hey, we want to do this in the city around our hospital system, because people come here from around the country and around the world for treatment. And when they're inside of the hospital, they're guided really well. But when they're outside in their city, they are so overwhelmed and they feel very lost and afraid, because a lot of them have very serious medical conditions. Mm-hmm. So this medical center reached out and said, we have questions, like we want to learn from y'all. And I was like, wow, this is really cool that they're looking to us to see how to do this community facing, you know? Mm-hmm. So all of that is to say, like, what's next for Eat Fit? I don't know. You know, there's a lot of priority on statewide health, community health, trying to get Louisiana out of the bottom 49th or 50th. And, you know, ASHRA has a strong push with that. And we have something that's called the Healthy State Initiative that we're working with the state and all types of organizations through the state. And someone in our philanthropy jokingly said, Molly, y'all have had the Healthy State Initiative for, yeah, you know, a decade now. Y'all have been working on this. But it's interesting, because a lot of what we started in one space is we're looking at using, okay, how do we use that as a model and learn from that and do that on a bigger scale, which is really cool. And there's a lot of different pieces that are conversations, and who knows where those will end up, you know?
Yeah. That's so interesting. Do you still do one-on-one clients?
I have a few clients who I meet with a couple of times a year, and it's accountability sessions on this, because they're people who maybe I started working with 15 or more years ago. Right. And so nutritionally, there's very little that we're editing or changing. Sometimes it's new products or whatever it might be, but largely it's accountability. And if they have a big life change, or they have something like sort of having a touch point with someone who you trust and you know that they love you and have your best interests. And then if there's something that, because I can see them very objectively, where maybe they can't, or other people close to them in their lives that are on the day-to-day. So I still have some of those who come. I refer to it as our clients, but it's really our dietitians, you know, Alexis, Lauren, and Rebecca in Baton Rouge. They're the ones that are hands-on, you know. So I say we do food sensitivity testing. You know, I went through the certification and got onboarded with that, and that's, but they're the ones doing it now, yeah. You know, because you just can't, it's not fair to the client if I don't have that space to really be there so flexible and available for questions or follow-ups as needed, you know?
Yeah. If, how, so I see it, a registered dietitian I have for a long time, but I have a bunch of friends that are RDs actually as well. So that's kind of how I know the people. How would you suggest someone that maybe doesn't know, you know, who, and it's not, it's very different than a doctor, than a primary, you know, or a specialist. So how would you suggest someone start the process to find a dietitian that they may want to work with?
So the governing body, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, has eatright.org, and you can find a dietitian. There's a find a dietitian link on their page. I do think a lot of it is personality fit. You know, it's got to be the right fit for you. And if someone has friends that are their close friends and they've connected really well with a dietitian, it's likely that you will too, if y'all kind of go with the same vibe and same energy and people that you're kind of drawn to. And I would say if you've met with a dietitian and you didn't have the best experience, keep looking. I mean, it's like a hairdresser, you know? Yeah. And so the eatright.org, there's SCAN, which is the sports cardiovascular nutrition space. I think it's called scandpg.org, but they have find a sports dietitian in your area. And so for someone who they may not really be, there may be like, I'm not playing football or a baseball player. I just, you know, do like a couple of times a week Pilates or whatever, but maybe that's more your space that you feel like you want someone who's more lifestyle focused, maybe, than someone who's more clinical focused or a diabetes educator or something like that. So I think, but on those platforms, they do list what their specialty is. Also virtual visits. So our dietitians now, we're based, you know, I said we have two in New Orleans, one in Baton Rouge, but we can do virtual visits anywhere in Louisiana, or, and also our dietitians are credentialed in Mississippi. And so if they're able to, you know, they can do virtual visits for anyone in either of those two states. Ours, if you don't mind, I'll just give a plug. It's literally nutrition@oshner.org. And it's, we have one scheduler, Lindsay, who is our dedicated scheduler, and Lindsay is on the receiving end of those emails. And so she'll hear from someone, you know, here's what I'm looking for. And she'll kind of go through with them the different types of appointments, because we have kind of everything from a more basic kind of fundamental nutrition appointment to the 12-week protocol we do, to the food sensitivity consults that I mentioned to you. So it's sort of the full spectrum of that. And so Lindsay sort of has the conversation with them, talks to them about the different options available, and then sees what's best. And then sometimes, you know, often insurance does cover it. We do take insurance, we do take Medicare, Medicaid, and then we have a lot of self-pay, you know, who are choosing to do that, you know, proactively in their health. And so, so I love our team. I think that they're very, I think that they're a really good fit for a really broad base of the population. And then when there's times that they're not, when something is more specific, more specialized, they know it, they hear it, and then they'll refer out to another dietitian, you know? So we try to kind of stay in our scope, do what we're really good at, you know? And I think that it's just, if, like I said, if you met with someone and you just didn't have a good fit, please don't think that all consults are going to be that way, that all sessions are that way. Like, you can have someone that's really helping you, you know, ideally you want someone who hears everything you got going on, not just food, but what's happening in your life, what's happening in your lifestyle, what level of support do you have at home, what kind of budget are we working with food, where do you grocery shop, do you cook, not cook, is fast food part of what you feel like is, you know, kind of your fallback? Because if so, while it may not be ideal, okay, well, there's still things that we can factor in, so we're not doing just a complete overhaul with people.
Yeah.
What are the factors that we need to really deal with to make it realistic? So there's a lot. How much is someone sleeping? What's their alcohol like? What are their self-soothing mechanisms they do when they're feeling stress or pressure? These are all conversations that we have, because food is kind of in the middle of all that stuff. So that's sort of, I would encourage you, your listeners, that if you're, when you're seeking out a dietitian, looking for someone that's looking at you as the whole person, not just jumping right into, tell me what you eat and here's what I want you to eat. You know, like, because, and so I think that that's just really important to know that you've got someone that's kind of like treating your whole space.
Yeah. And also, you know, it's so difficult to actually change your eating habits, right? Like, especially if you're not with talking to someone or have that accountability all along, that it doesn't really make sense. Or I think that it sets us up to fail if we think, oh, well, I'm just going to change everything about how I'm eating. Let me just fix all of these things.
Right. It's only going to last so long. Right.
Yeah. It's not really going to work. And then if you, and I, you know, and that there are things, I think another issue would also be like making sure we're eating stuff that makes us feel good, but being able to recognize that, like that also takes time and patience to know.
Yeah. 100%. And then you're right. Like, and the reverse, understanding the things that maybe you like the way it tastes while it's you're chewing it, and then it ends up leaving you feeling, you know. And so, well, I mentioned that I gave that presentation this morning. It was to a group of nurses, and one of the things that I shared was, you know, a lot of times if it's like someone's birthday and they've got cake in the break area mid morning, I don't look at that at 10 a.m. and think, oh, that has this much sugar or this much calories. That's not where my brain space is going. My brain space goes to, I don't want to crash later. I don't want to feel bottomed out later because it's early. I don't have a lot of food on my stomach. If I just ate a piece of cake right now, yeah, I know that it's going to lift me up and it's going to drop me right down. And there was like, we did an experiment with a continuous glucose monitor, which is fascinating. A lot of times they're for more people with diabetes, but now they're available to the layperson. And so I had the opportunity, a company sent one and I was able to use it for a month, and it was fascinating because you could see in real time. And I eat pretty well, like the things that I'm reaching for. And even then, but I was really surprised that even within that, like how much certain things affected me, that I was like, oh, I thought I was having just a little snack at night. And meanwhile, my glucose was hovering in the caution range for the first 6 hours. Yeah. My father-in-law was like, well, what about a Snickers? What if you ate a Snicker bar? What was happening? I'm like, well, I wasn't eating Snickers to see, you know? What about ice cream? What if you ate this? And I was like, everything he was saying, I was like, well, those aren't things I eat. So I don't know. Like I wasn't eating a Snickers bar just to see, but it was interesting because some of the things that, so all of that is like, was eye-opening to me. And that's something that working with a dietitian, you can start to learn a little bit more of like sort of those nuances of like, well, but I really do love the pink Himalayan sea salt chips from Costco. Like, well, when would it be the best time for me to have this? Because I really want to have them. And then like, how can I incorporate those? So like everything doesn't have to be perfect, but like some of these things that really just bring us pure happiness just because we like them, well, then maybe there's still a different way that we can fit these things in. And so I think there's also that too, and given that flexibility without the judgment on that.
Yeah. You mentioned food sensitivity tests. Can you explain what that is and how that works?
So food allergies, I think a lot of us are very familiar with. You get this skin test or something like this, and you see, what do you have an allergic response to? Food allergies are what's referred to as like an IgE reaction. And so if you think about this as being kind of this cascade of inflammation that happens in response to a trigger. So it could be environmental. For some people, it might be, you know, certain types of pollens or something like that, or it could be food-based. It could be a detergent or chemical in these things. So if someone has an allergy, it's usually a very rapid response. And so the obvious ones that you would think of are like peanut allergy, seafood allergy. Someone consumes it and they have that immediate reaction. A food sensitivity is often dose dependent. So the more you have of it, maybe the more severe your reaction. And it's also delayed reaction. So it may not be within that hour after you have it. It may not be until the next day, or it may only be if you've had it 2 or 3 or 4 days in a row. And then you start to just, and so it measures different. So it's not IgE, which is allergies. It's more IgG and IgM pathways, looking at the inflammation there. And so food sensitivities are vastly different. And so anyone who's coming through for food sensitivity testing, we ask them first to meet with our allergy department and rule out any food allergies, because we don't want them to come to us and say, oh, I figured it out, I have this sensitivity, when there might be something more severe underlying. So they all go to the allergy department first, get that ruled out. It's also better for their pocketbook, because a lot of times that's going to be either covered by insurance or very lower cost than doing the food sensitivity testing. So let's do that first, then come to us. And so you basically with the food sensitivity testing, we use Oxford Labs, it's MRT testing, mediator release testing, and the client would receive a kit. Either we give it to them or shop ship to them. They take it to the lab, they have their lab drawn, and I believe it's 4 vials, and then that's shipped to Oxford Labs. They run the report of what is the, of these foods, there's about 140 that are tested for and mediators that are tested. What is the response to these? And so there's some that are very low reactive, there's some that are moderate reactive, and there's some that are highly reactive. And so the approach that the dietitian then does, and this, you know, the client base that we see really responsive is when there's like inflammation-based things. So someone with chronic hives and they can't understand why, they're going to the allergist, the neurologist, they're going to all these things, and there's no explanation, like why are they breaking into hives so severely here and there, and there's no seemingly common thread on it. People with fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, migraines. So it's usually people who are sort of like, I've tried to explore what else is happening and I can't figure it out. Then let's try this and let's see. And so we have them keep a symptom survey. We have them keep a food log, a very detailed food log and a very detailed symptom survey so that we can start to see where we correlate. But the idea isn't just about avoiding those highly reactives. So you have this list of foods, you see what you're highly reactive to, but if all you did was avoid those, there's every food on the planet that you could still be eating and you're, you know, those haven't been tested for. So instead it's the reverse. It's that these foods that are low reactive are the foods that you limit your intake to, you know, for the first 14 days. And it can be really restrictive. So the dietitian, you know, is working with people to get really creative with those, you know, cocoa nibs and almonds or whatever, you know, like here's all the creative things you can do with these, you know, this limited list of low reactive foods. And then as time goes on, it progresses and gets more and more. So it's an elimination style diet with really pinpointed guidance. So they're not just shooting in the dark on that. Mm-hmm. We've never had launched a clinical trial. I mentioned we have the journal articles that we have under review, and we have one that's been published. Those are all kind of on that community space, the Eat Fit space. So we're actually launching a clinical trial, and it'll be this fall. Fingers crossed, we are actually finishing the protocol. You submit it to IRB for approval. And then, you know, if we hopefully get approval, we will be doing a call for participants specifically for fibromyalgia and rheumatoid arthritis. Oh, and wow. Then getting those participants this fall and then starting the clinical trial next year to really track, because there's limited data. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the data is really small studies or more individual case studies or more abstracts. And so we're seeing such positive response from people. And so we're like, we have the ability to do and track this. And so we want to look and see, can we have a more robust data behind it?
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting.
It's overwhelming. I've never done anything like this before. Fortunately, we have a researcher at Ashna that helps, and I have a grad student who's helping with that, but it's like, wow,
that's a lot of work. It's a lot of detail.
Yes.
And then also, you know, I just want to kind of close out with, you have your own podcast, Fueled Wellness and Nutrition, and you kind of tackle different topics. Can you talk about what?
Yeah. So I've been doing that since spring of 2019. So a little over 3 years, and it's every week. And like I said, it's Fueled Wellness and Nutrition. And it's a really cool way because there's things that we always want to know more about, you know, and a lot of times, you know, like I just recently did an interview with a researcher / professor she's a psychologist, a clinical psychologist who also specializes in food addiction. Mm-hmm. And she's a professor at University of Michigan, and she had studied at Yale, and she developed the Yale Food Addiction Survey, which is sort of like if you're doing an assessment of like an alcohol use disorder or other substance abuse, but this is modified for food addiction. And so my interview with her, I was like, wow, I'm learning so much, you know? And so for me, that's just a really fun way to always kind of like learn from these experts and be like, you know, because there's a lot that maybe like we do an alcohol free for 40 challenge every year. And there's a lot that we've learned of how alcohol affects our body. Well, then I'm interviewing an alcohol researcher who goes into why.
Yeah.
Why does alcohol make you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning when you drink? Yeah. And why does alcohol leave us having more anxiety than when we aren't drinking? Like, what's the mechanisms of how this happens? And so to me, that's just a really cool thing, you know? And then I have some that I just started sort of like a sub-series, I guess maybe last fall, called The Raw Truth. And I think we've done maybe 5 or 6 so far. And that's just me being really curious, because I think there's so many people that you just hear people's stories and it's fascinating, you know, there's David Sedaris is a writer. He writes for the New Yorker, and he's just this very witty, funny person. And he writes for the New Yorker. He's on BBC Radio. He's just all of this stuff. I've read all of his books.
Yeah.
And I like, he doesn't realize it, but like, we're like best friends, you know, in my mind, you know. But I had seen that he had an addiction to meth and an addiction to alcohol and smoking. And he's talked about how he quit smoking, but the first two, he never indicated. And I'm like, those are really big deals. How did this happen? And so I reached out to his publicist, and, you know, at first I got a no, and then I sweetened the pot, like, well, maybe we could do an article in the newspaper also. And he was on tour. So then I went to his book signing at his tour, and then I brought him a pottery bowl because I make pottery. And then I said that I wanted to cover that. And I was so nervous because you're basically saying, I want to talk with you about your addiction that you've never talked about before.
Yeah.
That's not how I said it, but that was what I was trying to get across. And he said, you know, I told him I'd reach out to his publicist, and he said, well, I have a book coming out. This was back in April. He said, I have a book coming out at the end of May. Why don't you reach out to her again? That would be a good time. And I'm like, ugh. And so I did. And you know, she said, we had 20 minutes blocked. And at my husband's recommendation, he said, don't confirm that, because if he's enjoying it, he may just go.
Yeah.
We ended up talking an hour and a half, and it was really enlightening. So that was a raw truth with him that was really about how he overcame such powerful addictions.
Wow.
And it's hilarious. Like, he's hilarious through it. And then he goes into these really dark, heavy spaces. And so those are, and so I think, you know, I think about the listeners of my podcast, you know, it can be very light. Like the one last week was, here's my top 5 favorite protein bars on the market right now. That's really light, you know? And then there's others where it's something like that with him. And so, you know, kind of the full spectrum. And my husband is also sort of, as you hear, like my sounding board. And he said, you've been kind of going into this space a little bit too much of these a little bit out there topics. I think you got to take it back to, what's your favorite finds at Costco right now? So, you know, you try to have a balance of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. I love David Sedaris. I listened to Armchair Experts with Dax Shepard, and he was on there recently too. And they were talking about
it. Take a listen to my interview with him. It's my favorite one I've ever done.
That's amazing.
You can hear me. I was really nervous at first. And in fact, we had to edit out some of my stammers because I literally was like stuttered my first words. And but then once we started talking, I felt like, okay, now he does realize he's my best friend, you know, and it's comfortable. But he, like, you hear me, I'm laughing the whole way through. And again, like some really heavy stuff. But if you're a David Sedaris fan,
take
a listen. Yeah. If it's just, you just like fueled wellness, you could just put fueled and Molly and it should pop up. And it was, I believe in June of this year, June of 2022.
It came out. Wow. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's so interesting. I mean, I know you and I know the stuff that you do, but it was so interesting to hear all the details.
I appreciate you also just, you know, spotlighting a dietitian and spotlighting the work that we do and why, like our why behind it. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Cool. All right. Thanks, Molly. Yeah.
Thanks, Renee.
That's all for today. Thanks so much for listening to Making Good. You can find our podcast on all the platforms you find your favorite podcasts. You can also find a transcript of this episode and all of our episodes on our website, churchalley.store. If you loved this episode, please share it and let others know about the good work of Church Alley Cafe and Grocery. Thanks again for listening to Making Good. I hope you have a really good day. We'll see you next time.